Let's go back east and bring in, I think, one of the top sports writers in the country, Pat. We've had him on before, and that is Howard Bryant of ESPN. Howard, good morning. How are you?
Hey, Howard.
Hey, Marty. Hey, guys. How you doing?
Well, we're doing great. It's a gorgeous day out here today, and it's just a pleasure to have you on.
What a surprise. A great day in San Francisco.
I know you miss it.
How do you cope?
I know you miss it. I know that. But you are sort of in the middle of everything that's going on back east. You know, you're in the area of Massachusetts. And we talked a lot yesterday, Howard, about baseball and the healing process, and especially the way baseball has handled this latest tragedy. And I just want to get your perspective on it. Being in the area where you are and you know the Red Sox organization so well, how did it all look to you?
Well, I think it's fascinating. We were talking a little bit about it this morning, that a lot of what we do privately. And especially when it comes to grieving and thinking and trying to process. And then something like this happens, and there's this need to want to be around other people. And then we get to the ballpark, and I think people are just comforted by each other. And you can see the looks that everyone's giving each other, and you can see that this is the place where people want to exhale, where it gives them that sense of normalcy that we always talk about. But I think it's more than normalcy. I think it's a place that you want to go to for sort of a provide the balm for you. I mean, I remember being at Yankee Stadium during the World Series and post 9/11, and it was the same thing when President Bush came out and everyone, you know, people really wanted to be there because they felt safe with each other. There was a safety in numbers thing, which was kind of counterintuitive because being around all of these people, you would think would be the place where it was most dangerous.
Howard, I got to ask you about what happened yesterday at Fenway. It was the first time the Red Sox had played since the marathon, right, at Fenway. And to me, when I think of baseball players, I think of them living in the cities in which they play and then taking off to Florida or Arizona where they get tax breaks. But for David Ortiz to make the very declarative statement, this is our blanking city, to me that really meant that he was taking ownership and pride of being a part of the Boston community. Did you read it in a similar fashion?
Well, David is one of the guys who, you know, he doesn't spend the entire offseason here, but he certainly has made it clear that there's a piece of Boston that will always be a part of him, and vice versa. I mean, I think David specifically, when you look at the ups and downs of his career, especially the ups, I mean, Boston saved his career. Boston turned him into a legendary player for his time and a legendary player in the city. And so that connection is always going to be very strong, especially too with the fact that over the last several years, as he's been on the decline, that the team, you know, ownership did not abandon him. And so I think he feels a very strong connection to the city of Boston. And I think also as a competitor, I think that David is one of those people who he's got that gift that a lot of people wish they had, that he's got it. Where when he's around, he makes you feel better. And I don't think there was another day in the city's recent history where people needed to feel better. And wow, he provided that for them.
Well, great insight. You're right. And I felt better listening to him. I really did.
Yeah.
Hey, how good are the Red Sox? The Giants will see the Red Sox here in San Francisco in August, Howard. They're 12-4. This American League East is going to have a say about who wins the National League West because they all play them. So how good are the Sox?
Well, what do we know? What do we know, Marty? We've all been around this game for a long time. We were talking about the Angels on the sports reporters this morning, and everyone wants to talk about the $240 million contract with Pujols, and you know whether he's DHing, and you know what that contract's all about. But the Angels are second to last in pitching. The Red Sox lost 93 games last year, being at the bottom of pitching. This year, the Red Sox are number one in pitching. I think you know where I'm going with this. You pitch, you win. And the Red Sox made, I think, their third error of the season last night or yesterday afternoon. So you pitch, you play defense. I think the people in San Francisco know that this and not huge offensive numbers is the way you win championships. And that's what the Red Sox are doing right now. If you've got John Lester and you've got Clay Buchholz pitching like top front-end guys, then they're a very dangerous team. For as long as they sustain that, you pitch, you win. And I think it's more so than ever. I really do look at the Giants as the template for this. We live in a time of baseball now where we've turned the postseason into a tournament. We've elongated the season so much that it's virtually impossible for bats to carry you for a month. But you can pitch and you can play defense for a month. And that's how you can win a World Series. And so if the Red Sox, if Lester and Clay Buchholz can sustain this for any length of time and just put a season together, they're going to be very dangerous. No question about it.
Boy, great insight. I hadn't thought of it like that. The tournament is a month, and hitting can't carry you for a month. You got to pitch your way through it. Yeah, good.
Think about it, Marty. How many teams stay hot offensively for a month?
Yeah, you're right. Especially in October.
And if you notice the playoffs, you know, the Giants were cold for a little while. They got a little warm against the Reds. They got a little cold again. Then they picked it up again against St. Louis and stayed hot for the rest of it. You can't ask a team to hit your way through October. But you can pitch your way through it.
Yeah. Well, good point. I like it. I always learn something from Howard Bryant. ESPN. Very good. All right. You got to see the movie 42. I'm anxious to get your thoughts about it.
Well, I'm going to try not to be too harsh, Marty, but once again, I felt like it's a movie for children. I took my 8-year-old. He enjoyed it very much. He was incredibly inspired by it. I feel like I was very disappointed by the false advertising that it was the true story of an American legend. The American legend part is true, but the true story part certainly isn't. There's a lot of liberties that the film took, but it's Hollywood, so what do you expect? I felt like it was a little disturbing to me that there was so much in the film that we needed to, that the filmmakers felt they needed to educate the public on, which tells us that a lot of people know this story. They didn't know the ins and outs of the story. But on the whole, I feel like if the story does its intended mission of getting people into the theater and then hopefully getting them to pick up a book and read the real story about it, then I think it's a success.
All right. I think that motivated a lot of people to look at the backstory. And especially, yeah. I'll just bring up one character, Wendell Smith. Wendell Smith. Go ahead.
Well, the Wendell Smith character was the one I had the biggest problem with. I mean, number one, Wendell Smith was a very, very well-known, probably perhaps the, along with Sam Lacy, the best-known African-American sports writer of his time.
Correct.
And they started the film with this sort of false Hollywood tension of Jackie not really trusting or getting along with Wendell. They knew each other from the tryout in 1945.
Right, in Boston.
Exactly. Wendell Smith drove to Boston with Jackie Robinson in 1945. And also, if you were an African-American standout like Jackie Robinson was in sports, you knew exactly who Wendell Smith was and you knew exactly what the Pittsburgh Courier was all about. And I felt the other part of it, too, is I think it was a little bit too much credit. I understand the need to simplify a Hollywood narrative and a Hollywood narrative arc. But to begin a movie about the integration of baseball with Branch Rickey saying, "I'm going to do it," makes it sound as though it's his idea.
Right.
When for several years following World War II, there was incredible public pressure in Boston, in New York, in Chicago, to integrate. It was not, the question wasn't something that Frank Rickey had conjured up by himself.
Well put, and I talked about that a couple of times at the Vogue, and I gave that backstory because Lester Rodney and the Daily Worker was part of that as well.
Absolutely. And Izzy Mutznick in Boston.
Yeah. Boy, I love having you on, Howard. Thank you so much. We got to do it again soon, and you're one of the top in the country, and I appreciate you coming on.
Call anytime. We'll see you guys in the Bay.
All right. Thank
right on,
you.
Howard.
Oh, boy. Howard Bryan, ESPN, right?
Hey, Pat? I don't make it through a Sunday without watching the sports reporters, and he's right. one of the best on that panel.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
he's just a sharp guy. Follow his Twitter feed, and you'll get a lot of insight. What occurred Thursday night in Boston, check out some of his stuff. I mean, he had some very concise points to make.
Wow, beautiful. All right.